Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 19 of Cinemental.
Now, this I can do.
I can't compete with you physically, and you're no match for my brain.
I don't give a crap if you covered yourself in peanut butter and had a 15-hooker gangbang.
Welcome to another episode of the movie podcast that we can only hope you enjoy listening to as much as we enjoy making. My name is Stephen Owicki, and I'm here with my co-hosts, as usual, Hassan Godwin and Lathan Conger III. Today's guest is a musician, a film historian, and the author of over 40 published books. He is probably most well-known as the first American author of continuation James Bond novels from 1996 to 2002, when he wrote six original 007 novels and three film novelizations. His acclaimed five-book serial, The Black Stiletto, is currently in development as a feature film or television series. Most recently, his novels include Blues in the Dark, In the Hush of the Night, and Secrets on Chicory Lane. And coming this September, a new thriller, Hotel Destiny, a ghost noir. He also writes regularly for Cinema Retro magazine. Raymond Benson, welcome to Cinemental.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's absolutely our pleasure, believe me.
Absolutely.
That is quite the resume. What is the musician side of things?
Oh, I've been a composer and a piano player since I was a kid.
Oh, and, wow, fantastic!
One of the things I was telling you earlier that I lived in New York City. I was in theater then, and I was composing music for shows and playing the piano off Broadway, way off Broadway, and so on, and directing as well. But I still play. I have gigs. I used to have gigs.
What's slowing you down now? What's the problem?
Yeah, I've been uploading piano pieces to Facebook.
He's not slowed down. Actually, every day he usually does a live piano play on Facebook.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Overachiever.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Stop making the rest of us look bad. I put this...
Hey, we're busy making podcasts. That counts.
I put this placard up today.
I noticed that. I just saw the bottom half on the show.
So take
earlier.
That, Raymond. That's what I did. That's how I get down.
All right.
I put up...
Is that RoboCop?
No, I don't even know what that is. I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay.
it's not a Valcadia character?
No, it's a Macross.
It's not you though.
No, it wasn't me. I didn't do it.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah,
Hassan is also a comic book artist and writer. So
awesome.
And for Raymond's second film, his choice is Twin Peaks: Fire Walk With Me.
My secret diary. That page is missing. There is no other person who could have known where it was.
Did Bobby give you this? Or is there someone new?
Your Laura disappeared. It's just me now. You made me write it all down.
We live inside a dream.
Who am I?
I don't know.
You look just like my Laura.
Don't make me do this!
Directed by David Lynch with a running time of 134 minutes. Ostensibly a prequel to the TV series, this film gives so much more context to the Twin Peaks universe and follows the final week of Laura Palmer's life leading up to where season one launched, filling in gaps from the investigation, all the while introducing and expanding even more characters to this already established world. Raymond, why did you pick this movie?
Well, yes. I was told to pick a guilty pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't have any guilty pleasures. I think every movie I like is a good movie.
was the point. You pick a movie that you like no matter what.
Yeah.
No matter
what
anybody else thinks.
But I thought about it and I I really did not like Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me when I first saw it. And I was a huge Twin Peaks fan. Twin Peaks is my favorite TV show of all time. Okay. I love it. Absolutely love it. And so I was really looking forward to Fire Walk With Me in 1992 when it was coming out. I was just like the first one. I saw it opening day. You know, I was there. I was angry coming out of that movie theater. I was just going, what did David Lynch just do to me? I was so upset. But you had
to know the propensity of David Lynch, of the chances of him doing something like this to you exist.
Not really. I mean, you know, up to that point, I liked everything he did. You know, even Dune, I loved. Blue Velvet, I think, is still his masterpiece, really. But Twin Peaks, he was just coming off of Twin Peaks. And then there was Wild at Heart, which I liked. I thought that was terrific.
Yep.
So I was all ready for this. I thought, this is all right. More Twin Peaks. Okay. You know, and it was such a different tone, mostly, you know, completely different kind of tone from the TV series. It was dark. It was unpleasant, very unpleasant. It was, at the time, I thought it was misogynistic. I don't now. It was just, it gave me I wanted to take a shower almost, you know. It was like that kind of feeling afterwards.
Do you think that your expectation going in played a part?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And I think it did for a lot of people, you know. I mean, you know, it got booed at Cannes Film Festival, you know, that year. And it bombed. I mean, the movie bombed.
He denies that story, though, by the way.
Oh, no, it did.
The producer denies that story that it got booed. I'm not disputing you, but I was reading about it, and I will tell you why later. But and he denies the story about the booing. So I don't know. But I don't dispute that this movie got booed. Excuse me. And that's all I'll say. I'm leaving now. I'm just
gonna... Go on, Raymond. Yeah. Tell us why your opinion changed.
I was talking. Right. Yeah. Well, so, you know, and it didn't, you know, Dale Cooper wasn't in it much, and it just was, I thought it was an unpleasant movie. But anyway, I was talking about seeing it again, and I thought it worked a lot better. You know, I got the VHS when it came out because I collected David Lynch stuff, and I bought it. So I watched it again, and I thought it worked a lot better on the small screen.
Interesting.
And then I realized, you know what? This is a horror movie. The more I thought about it and the more I looked at it as a horror movie, I thought it's great. This is a horror movie, and it works really well as a horror movie.
Okay.
I've seen it seen it more times since, and I really like it. And then, I learned that, you know, there was almost 2 hours of other footage that he had to cut out that had all the other Twin Peaks characters in it and everything. I was going, oh, we should see that, you know. And then I got hold of the original script, and I got to read the whole script, and I went, oh, I wish I could see this. And finally, when it came out on Blu-ray, you know, they had the missing pieces, which was the extra footage.
Yep.
And so that, you know, made a lot of big difference. And then I've actually seen a bootleg now of the movie with the missing pieces put in they were supposed to be. Cool. And it's really great. It's almost a 4-hour movie.
Wow.
So now I really love the movie. I think it's terrific. And, you know, season 3 of Twin Peaks really draws a lot from Fire Walk With Me. You have to have seen Fire Walk With Me before you really can get into season 3 of Twin Peaks.
Okay.
So, in fact, you know, we were talking about Philip Jeffries earlier, Steve.
Yeah.
Jeffries is a big part of season 3.
Okay.
They use footage of David Bowie.
Oh, you know, fantastic.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah. So it's now very much a part of the Twin Peaks, you know, thing. And also Lynch's movies became, for the rest of the 90s, were more like Fire Walk With Me in style.
Yes.
You know, so I got into that, you know, so I learned to accept,
you knew what to expect.
Fire Walk With Me.
Yeah. I think it's funny when people who only know David Lynch for films like Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart and Mulholland Drive, you'll turn around and show them The Elephant Man, and they go, wait, this is a David Lynch film?
Yeah.
Or a straight story?
Yeah.
Well, it's the straight story, yeah.
G-rated you know, Disney movie.
Right. You know, I mean, he's a very capable filmmaker at his heart. And the fact that he chooses to put on screen probably the way his brain sort of sees the world, which is interesting and fascinating, you know, just lends to
He's another one of these guys that makes art films, you know, I mean.
I mean,
he did do a couple of, you know, trying to go commercial like The Elephant Man and Dune. You know, that was Hollywood, you know, productions, blah, blah, blah. But when he makes a David Lynch film, quote unquote, it's an art film. And, you know, it's for a specific audience, you know.
If you dig Lynch, you dig it.
Exactly.
But you know what you're going to get, you know, for the most part. So, Hassan.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah, you start, Hassan.
Why don't you tell us what you thought of it?
Let me see if I got it correctly first.
Hold on. Okay. One quick question before you go in. Have you seen all of Twin Peaks, the TV stuff?
No, he said. Yeah.
I watched the TV show when it first aired as a kid. And then I watched partially, maybe halfway, not even halfway, maybe the first three, four episodes of season two.
Okay.
And then stopped.
Okay.
And season two is where it got canceled because it kind of everybody fell off as soon as they failed to or they refrained from solving the mystery from season one.
Immediately. Right. Okay. All right. So just go ahead.
Seemed like to me, without it, without all the mythology of the show and the series in and of itself, that it's a story of a girl who is being sexually assaulted by her father since she was 12 and has suppressed it to the point where, you know, taking all the mythology out of it, because I know there's a supernatural element to it, but seemingly the story is on a rudimentary level, has suppressed it to the point where she has replaced her father with an entity that she has not been able to, you know, that she subconsciously knows exactly who the entity is, but consciously cannot face the fact that this entity is her father. And the movie is catching us up with the last week of her life where psychologically she's coming out of a fog and able to face what the cause of her damage is, and in the midst of unraveling that mystery, she's still reeling with the residuals of who these assaults have made her into. The thing about it is that with taking the show completely off the table, it's not mysterious as to what's going on in the film. Once you're watching and you figure out, oh, she's being assaulted. She doesn't know who, you know, she's being assaulted by her father. She can't deal with the fact that she's being assaulted by her father. So it's turned her into a duplicitous kind of monster of her own. Her father also moonlights as a serial killer of some proliferation. And once you figure that out, I think the movie is successfully vague about it up until a point, and then there it gives you enough pieces. By the time you figure that out, we're only less than halfway through the movie. So at some point, in my opinion, the audience is ahead of the main character in figuring out the crux of the problem. And so now all the other stuff is style. You know, everything else you're watching is a stylization of someone coming out of their mental damage long enough to see the truth and then get murdered for knowing the truth. And so that kind of left me hollow. That was my interpretation of it. It left me hollow. And then there's other things. There's Chris Isaacs just vanishing from what I can tell, without them really explaining what happened to him. I'm sure it's implied and I missed it to some extent. There is the David Bowie thing that's like, okay, you know. I agree with Raymond about the Kyle MacLachlan just sort of not being in the film at all, even though he's the main character in the TV show. So I didn't enjoy this ride. This experience was a.
I understand your pain.
let me ask you a question, Hassan. Do you think, looking at it the way you looked at it, do you think that her drug use was what partially lifted the veil on her realization that her father was molesting her? Or do you think the drugs were her way of masking or trying to keep those veils in place?
Probably a little bit of both. Okay. I mean, the psychological damage of that, especially it happening since she said, I think she said she was 12 years old.
Yeah.
You know, that it's kind of incalculable how much, you know, because her brain, you know, the horror of it to whatever extent, and I am not a psychologist by any stretch of the imagination, but the horror of it.
But I play one for, on this podcast.
Yes, exactly. And yes, as far as this podcast is concerned, I'm PhD. Probably, you know, the damage was far reaching, you know.
Of course.
I mean, who knows exactly where any of her motivations were coming from after that.
Okay. You know? All right. That's fair.
So
one thing that I think.
And you could argue, one second, you could argue that all the things that the mother and her child, you can argue all of those things were her subconscious trying to reveal to her the truth and get her to look specifically at what the problem is. But right. She's not the only one who saw them. So that's the supernatural aspect that kind of
right.
That kind of knocks you off your kilter a little bit to right. in fully interpreting what's going on without any knowledge of the mythology of the TV show in and of itself. If you're just watching it cold, you know,
yep.
And I was basically watching it cold this time around because I hadn't.
It's been a long time for the
TV. Yeah, it's been 30 years since I've seen the show.
Okay.
And it's been, I never really managed to get into season 3. So I never returned to it. So.
Or the rest of the 2.
Lay, I know I'm pretty sure where you're going to land on this, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'll be quick. I was obviously a big fan of Twin Peaks. So going in, I was biased because I loved it, similar to Raymond. I didn't have the same reaction when I saw it. Actually, you and I saw it together at Woodfield 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, seeing it on the big screen in reverse of seeing it on the TV was, at first, it didn't seem right. But then by the end of the movie, it just, I mean, it, you know, obviously when the TV to movie, but it was still captivating. And the thing I love about Lynch is he picks these, you know, little detailed scenes that always stick with you. And every movie he has, there's, certainly all his good ones, there's 5 or 6 of these scenes in every movie. You know, in Blue Velvet, it's the scene near the end where the cop is standing up dead in the room and what's his name? Frank Booth is coming to cause some problems. In this, there's multiple. I was trying to think of
don't a way look
to
phrase at me! It.
Yeah, there you go. That's better. But in this, the feeling whole movie crossed. Is haunting. I mean, it's at the beginning, it kind of teases you because it starts off with a couple of funny things. Except, obviously, the credits are not funny. They're brutal right off the bat. And, you know, in symbolically wise, a TV gets absolutely destroyed in the opening credit shot as right. if he's saying, we're not doing the TV show. We're doing something else here.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just haunting scenes in this movie. The whole scene with David Bowie is just, I mean, that really got to me. Like, it bothered me. The scene with the picture on the wall where they eventually go in the picture.
Oh, that's the best scene in the movie. That is my favorite scene in the movie.
I would have to agree, probably with me as well. And what I, you know, I love the movie. I think it's, you know, I just think image-wise, and I'm going to be biased because I like the TV show. I'm trying to look at it the point of view of someone who had not seen the TV show or like Hassan hadn't seen it in a while. I can see the context of it not fully coming to fruition. I think, and maybe, again, Raymond's probably going to disagree with me here because he's seen the show as much as I have, but I think what they're trying to do with the show and what he was trying to do is make the part of humanity that rapes and kills almost like that's the villain. Like the entity of rape and violence is this indefeatable monster they can't be overtaken by humans. And with this movie, she fights and she fights and she fights and she dies in her battle against this. But then at the end, we get this beautiful sequence to end the film in the Black Lodge that just, you know, it's just this vision of hope. And in contrast to the rest of the movie, I mean, that scene gets me every time. And I think it's the perfect bookend and why I love this film. I think it's just balanced when everything comes, you know, to a point at the end.
Okay. That's fair.
Sorry.
No.
Not anvil on the radio audience there. You can dust yourself off, get up, take a few minutes, come back if you'd like to.
I haven't watched this since we saw it in the theater. Mentioning to Raymond earlier that I recently reviewed the original first season, the first 8 or 10 episode run that came out with Deirdre, because she had never seen them. We didn't go into second season yet, and I have not watched the later seasons because I figured it's just something we'd dive into once we were finished with that full second season and just kind of work our way through organically. So she actually did not watch this movie with me. We'll get to it after the first two seasons are done. There's so much good in this movie. I don't really know where to start. You guys have already touched on a few of the things I've already noted about, and I just feel like that dream sequence, Raymond, the one that you say is your favorite scene in the movie. I love the fact when she's sitting there and she looks over at the door and she looks back on the bed and there's that girl lying on the bed bloody, and she just says, you know, about don't let him take the ring or
she says Dale is in the lodge. And that refers to the last episode right. of the second season.
Right. So then she turns back to the door again and turns back and the girl is gone, and she's more upset by the fact that the girl is gone than by the fact that she was there in the first place.
Exactly. It's so dreamlike. I mean, Lynch does dreams better than anybody. You know,
yeah, most people do real life. Yeah, I agree.
I know
the level of discomfort in the dinner scene where she comes in and he starts going after her about her hands not being clean.
Oh, yeah.
that whole 4 minute scene is so unbelievably unsettling, and you follow it in which I see him as being the Bob character there. Or being partially the Bob character there.
Yeah.
Now,
at least breaking through for sure.
And now you turn around and you follow that up with him coming in to kiss her goodnight, in which he's clearly full Leland again. And it's such a 180 degree turn after that sequence that you're left like so unnerved by.
Yeah.
And you watch that as a sort of mirror image. And you realize that I think that's one of the earliest, you know, kind of things where you see, besides the fact, you know, where she, you know, runs out of the house and sees him coming out of the house, you know, after she saw Bob in the bedroom. But I think that that's one of the earlier indicators of that there's clearly something going on there, you know, and obviously, you know, and I understand, Hassan, you're seeing that as a psychological thing as opposed to a true physical manifestation of another being inhabiting or another force inhabiting the father. But yeah, I just watching this movie, and then I sat and I was telling Raymond that I watched all of the deleted and extended bits as well, just to get a little bit more context from the film. And I think that, and I've not watched this longer cut with everything in it, but I think getting rid of all the sequences that have all those side characters that he just kind of shot the extra scenes for to have them involved, that was an excellent call, removing all that stuff.
Well, yeah, he had to do that. I mean,
I think it just kind of muddies the waters of the film a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't release a 4-hour. Right,
right. Well, not just that, but I think
it made no money. It would make negative money.
I get that. I think that there's probably 7 or 8 minutes that he could restore to that film.
Certainly the Jeffries part. I think the whole Jeffrey sequence, he should have left the way he had it.
That, and I think absolutely the sequence that explains why he had to kill Teresa Banks, because he cut that out of the movie.
I don't remember that, but yeah.
That's the phone call when she calls him. and he realizes that she knows who it is.
Oh, that was right. That's not in Firewalk right. with Me. I can't remember.
No.
Yeah.
It is. Well, it's not in there, but it's.
It's discussed. Right. It's discussed because Jacques said, "Oh, that girl called asking about you guys' fathers," but they don't actually show her calling him on the phone.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like,
but she dies in the first scene of the movie, right? That's who's.
But there's
dying.
Flashbacks with her.
Yeah, yeah.
In the missing.
But I mean, when the TV gets smashed and you hear someone scream, that's her death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But. No, I just felt that there's probably, like you said, all the David Bowie stuff, I think, should have gone back in. Upon reading it a lot about this and going and doing my usual level of research about this and discovering that Ingalls and Lynch had actually planned three films. They had planned a trilogy, and this was just going to be kind of the lead in for it. And the next yeah. film was going to have Bowie at the hotel in Argentina finding a portal, you know, finding out that Judy. The character Judy that he talks about is Josie's sister, Josie. Weird. And then he finds a portal to the Black Lodge in Argentina, which then leads him to discover a bunch of other ways into the Black Lodge that are all over the world. And it becomes this sort of massive.
Well, a lot of that's in season three. A lot of that
is it. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's that's
okay,
the best
all right,
part.
Cool. Yeah. Then I'm glad that he went back and he mined all that stuff to put in, into season three, then I'll have to just enjoy it when I see it there.
Yeah. Frost put it in. Well, did Ingalls help?
Ingalls was not involved with season three.
No, it's just Frost.
Right. But obviously Lynch had that stuff around. So I enjoyed this immensely, reviewing this again, just in and of itself, just altogether by itself. In reference to the show, I absolutely adored it. I couldn't have probably enjoyed reviewing a movie much more than I did this, other than the Muppet movie last week, and that was for entirely different reasons. But
hope so.
Yeah, this is far and away one of my favorite Lynch films, easily.
It is the least accessible of his films, and that's why.
No, it didn't.
Well, yeah.
By Inland Empire.
No, Inland Empire. Oh. Well, going in, you know, you feel like, oh, I didn't watch the TV series. Going into Inland Empire, you're like, okay, I got a shot with this. And then 40 minutes into that, you're like, fuck this movie. I don't know what's going on. it's just, again, like Raymond said, the way he crafts dreamlike sequences, it's just, I don't know anyone who's done it better than him that I've seen on screen or maybe consistently done it better over time. With each successive film that has a dream sequence, it's, you know, it feels different each time.
I do feel like in Firewalk with Me, I do love it now, but I do feel like there are sequences that look cheap. I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, it looks like sometimes like...
Yep.
If you like press on the set, it's going to fall over.
not even like TV production level.
Yeah, exactly. And there's certain performances by some of the smaller actors that I think are bad.
Ghastly.
Give me one.
But you know what's funny about that, man? And I get what you're saying, but the thing is, with a Lynch film, you never know if that's what he wants.
Oh, I think
or if that's just what you're getting.
Yeah. No, I think
based on being a bad actor.
Right.
So you kind of you can kind of just see it and just no, but you kind of see it and just go, "Oh, okay."
Yeah. It's just
no, I didn't. that's not how
this
I reacted
movie
at all.
Is getting into his style, a different style that he was doing in the 90s and beyond, where there's a lot of scenes that are awkward. You know, and I think he intentionally makes them awkward. But in this one, they're so awkward that they just kind of don't work. I think Cheryl Lee is fantastic in it. I think she is absolutely brilliant.
Oh, my God.
She should have been nominated for an Oscar for it.
Easily.
And I think Ray Wise is absolutely great in it. You know,
can't stand him. I've never liked him since RoboCop. Hated that guy since RoboCop. Really good.
There's a great. There's a great, Raymond, real quick, there's a great shot in Twin Peaks that kind of goes along with what Steve was saying, how he changes his emotion. From the TV show, there's a moment where he's crying about Laura, and then instantly something happens and he turns and looks and he's out of the crying and now as Bob. And it's a classic moment from the TV show that I remember more than anything. So I think he's really good. I don't know about RoboCop, but
I don't know anything about RoboCop.
I'm mostly making a joke, but he's one of Boniger's people in RoboCop. Right. Yeah. He was a guy in a nightclub that got dragged out by his hair.
Yeah.
In RoboCop.
So anyway, yeah. So I look forward to the day when one of Lynch's films is one of our main films, so we can really kind of dig into Lynch and his oeuvre. But
well, you can have me back and I'll pick one.
Oh, there you go. That'll do it. Absolutely. In that case, Latham.
Oh, yay.
We're going down the tube.
And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
All right, so now we're moving on to Twin Peaks.
All right. Can't wait for this.
Yeah?
Well, I can, because I have to wait for it to load, but you know what I mean.
Maybe what I should probably do is drop another.
Great tagline. Great. All right. Do you want to do it again without me interrupting?
I'll just fucking put it where I want it. I already said it once.
USA, tagline's great. Lettering is right with the show. You have this, you have the most iconic object in the show, the iconic actress and character, and you're in the Black Lodge. I mean,
yeah.
Everything, if you're a fan, this is a perfect book.
This gives you everything you could expect, you know.
Correct.
So next is the UK poster.
I don't like this one at all. I think it's the Bob is just.
I mean, Kyle MacLachlan being in the forefront is a lie.
Yes. The thing is he wasn't in it much because initially he said he didn't want to be in it at all. And
then he realized, I'm Kyle MacLachlan. I haven't made a movie or TV show in years.
No. Yeah. Lynch said, listen, I really, really need you to be in this. He's like, I'll reduce your role. You're only going to be in a few spots. You only have to shoot for a couple of days. And he went ahead and agreed.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you want to be in it? That's just,
actors are a funny bunch, man.
Fuck them.
I think there's a lot less today worry about being pigeonholed into a role, because I think back then you had a lot less crossover with TV and film. So you had a guy who was a TV actor. If he got lucky enough to play a role in a movie and then he got lucky enough to get another role in a movie and it's the same fucking kind of role, he'd be like, okay, I'll do it twice. And then the third time comes up, it's like, hey, we want you to play this guy again. It's that, you know, he's so worried about becoming that guy for the rest of his career. If he's not one of those guys who's, you know, hey, I'm just happy to be working, you know, he starts to worry about that. But now
he was just coming off the doors. And,
I think there's a lot more that has to do with merit and ability now. And the crossing over between TV and film is not as big a chasm as
a lot of movie stars trying to get into TV now, because it's an up jumped medium. You know, it's come a long way from where it was.
It's a premier media. It's a premier format, and they're fucking paying.
He did need 2 years to prepare for Showgirls too.
So next is the French poster. Meh.
This one has to be good.
It's just stock footage. They just did a bunch of cutouts.
Yeah, essentially, that's pretty much what all the marketing platforms were, or programs were, around the world. Like the next one, Italy, although this one was more like it's from cat people. if those were cat paws instead of hands.
Malcolm McDowell is slightly in the background, like, there you are.
The French poster sucks. Italy,
it's got nipples,
just won't go in, man. One Italy, come on, man. Load up.
You know what the problem is, Lay, is the poster images are too big. That's why it's taking your computer a long time to load them. I'll shoot for making the images a little smaller on some of these.
I don't like this French A one. It's betrays what
But you mean Italy A?
Italy A. B is the little better. I'm sorry, movie
yeah.
B did.
B is B makes it look more like a horror film, which Raymond says it's a horror film. So, you know, I don't understand the slasher thing with the screaming thing once Latham decides to come back.
Yeah. I'm trying to see if I can reload now.
Nah, we're halfway through these now. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you're right. It's I'm not thinking. Okay, so, yeah.
Italy B it looks like a slasher movie poster.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little better than the other.
It's definitely better than the other one, but it's just, it's still, you know, it doesn't, I feel like it doesn't convey the film.
Yeah.
Next is Japanese A style.
Yeah, it's just amalgamation of shots. It's garbage.
Yeah, it's just, you know. And Japan B style. Like this. It's a weird it's a weird like photo that would be on the agent's wall or, you know, like the actor's wall or something, you know, it's like, hey, this is that time we acted with David Bowie.
Exactly. Yeah. It feels like
weird.
You know,
it's a weird.
If I lived in Japan, it would make
stock,
me
stock photo for them to use because it's not from the movie. Next, we have the Poland.
I mean, that one looks almost like. Yeah, it looks like the season 3 of the TV show. I mean, it's taking images
from
season
it's
1.
Graduation
that's how they start season 3.
So was it canceled?
Yeah, season 3.
How come it only stops at season 3? They did.
It was a one-off. They just wanted to go on. I mean, he wanted to do more Twin Peaks. He did 18 episodes
Does it end this?
Yeah,
does it end the story? Is it
no. No, it does not. It would end very annoyingly to you, Hassan.
Which means there's probably going to be more later.
I doubt it. He's almost dead.
Who, David Lynch?
Well, I mean, he's old. That was the wrong term. He's old.
Dead. Almost, a lot of work. He's only mostly dead.
Okay. He's so negative.
Right, anyway. So next, we have the Disney version by Colin Newman.
The Disney version.
I don't love it, but I like the concept.
Do a Disney version. Fire Walk with Me.
I love how he did the oil pit in the forest. That's really
cool.
Yeah,
no one else references that.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Next image by Dan Quintana, that's really nice. Like this was.
I love Cheryl and
this
Finn.
This was done for a Twin Peaks art show.
Is that Cheryl and Finn, or is that?
That's Cheryl and Finn. Yeah.
That's Cheryl and Fenn for sure.
I am the arm.
he tried here. I don't.
I like that. I love
this
image.
Not bad.
Okay.
So who is the arm, Latham?
It's a lot of work.
What's the significance of the Black Lodge?
I am the Black Lodge. I think it's the place where the evil incarnate lives, where the things that cause humans.
Where the doppelgangers come from.
Yeah, where they rape and kill
Doppelganger.
And the White Lodge is their antithesis that tries to destroy them.
Sometimes my arms bend back.
Yeah, this is that guy with the mask, the long nose mask that's in this next one. I'm sorry, are we on Gareth Gibson? Yeah, I mean that's one of the creepiest dudes in the film. This is pretty, it's not bad. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I like the torn pages of the diary thrown in there. I like the,
yeah.
It's an aspect that not a lot of people deal, you know, brought into their pieces.
Have you guys read her diary?
No.
No.
Great read. Like really, really good. Like it's better than you think.
Okay.
It's really mysterious and makes it adds to the show because it.
Did Lynch and Frost do it?
No, his daughter did, Jennifer Lynch.
Oh, really? Wow, cool. That's cool.
It's great. I got two copies if you guys want. I gladly send one out if you want.
I'll definitely want to read it at some point. Okay, so next is...
right. Moving along.
Right. Oh, this is like the TV movie?
So, yes, this was for an Icelandic screening and the Hugleikur Dagson.
I think it's clever.
It's a little misleading.
Yes,
you don't want to sit down in that movie with this imagery in your head thinking that's the kind of adventure you're in for.
Fucking Hallmark movie.
Oh my God, what happened? My eyes.
What my the eyes.
So next Trippy. Is Jeff Vandenberg.
Oh. Okay.
Lathan's behind because he keeps checking his phone.
I'm waiting for it to load and it just doesn't load.
It just won't load.
I mean, it's... okay, I see what he did. He put the lodge symbol.
Yep.
I don't know. It's a decent idea, but I don't like how it's non-symmetrical in the middle there. That bothers me.
Okay. Next is Julia A. doing kind of a Mooka styled illustration.
Okay. I mean, it's, in that style, it's good, right?
Next is an image by Maxime Porchon.
I like this one a lot.
Yeah, me too. I feel as much as I feel like you could just take Fire Walk With Me off of this, though, and it would work just as well.
Yeah, it works for the TV show. It works for everything.
Yeah, I think the idea works. Correct.
Yeah, I don't feel that this is... I don't feel it's differentiated enough from, you know, that. Next is Nate Gonzalez. Did it as a pulp novel.
Yeah, I like... I mean, again, I don't know about it as a poster, but it's perfect as the cover of
right.
a book.
Tales, right, well, that's what
Tales
he's going
from
for.
The Black Lodge.
Yeah. So this next...
I mean, that's brilliant. That part's brilliant.
The next image is by far the most disturbing.
Nick Charge?
Yeah. Because it's after she's died.
Well, yeah, and it's that guy. It's that guy from the...
No, it's Leland.
Oh, it's Leland with the... Yeah, with the makeup or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, he took elements that were, you know, some of my favorite elements from it. I like it.
Yeah, me too. Cool. So the next one is cool. It's by a guy named Peter Stultz. And what this guy does is he takes contemporary films and he reimagines posters as if they were made back as 40s noir films.
I mean, that's just absolutely way out of the box creative. So I'll give him credit for that. And it looks great.
If you look him up online, Peter Stultz, you will find he's done a bunch of these, and they're just, if you know a lot about movies, they're a lot of fun.
How is this not copyright infringement?
What do you mean?
You can just make any poster you want over anything.
As long as you don't make any money off of it, you could do whatever you want.
No, Latham.
Well, you can't make money off.
Latham, there was never a film. Alfred Hitchcock never made a film called Fire Walk With Me.
I know, but someone could define the intellectual property here and say
what intellectual property?
That he's taking a movie that exists and applying it to, he's only changing the fact that it has a different director creatively, but in essence, it's a poster for Fire Walk With Me. I mean, I love it.
How many films out there have the same name? Lots of them.
You can't copyright a name anyway. You can't copyright a title. So you...
Right.
He's got no imagery from the film.
Correct.
So this is the guy that can make money off these side posters without licensing them, correct?
Theoretically, that's correct.
Oh, theoretically.
Because he's essentially making a brand new, he's making a poster for a film that was never created.
It's a workaround.
Yeah. I think it's a really great idea, and it's a really...
Well, of course it is. It's
and
brilliant.
The way he makes the posters and paints them is just awesome. You know, now if you look in that poster in the lower right corner, he has the Welcome to Twin Peaks sign. So he might run into trouble there.
Sure, that's a good point.
You know, other than that. So next is Fat Boy Art.
I don't get the Roman numerals here.
Me neither. I was going to ask you if that had some meaning for something, but I don't understand what the point of that is. Because I figured if anyone would know, you would.
Unless it's the, how many days? No, it's 7 days of Laura Palmer, last seven days.
Yeah, maybe. It?
Maybe it is.
But the Roman numerals.
It's a weird. If that's work, it, if it's if that's the reason, that's a weird reason.
I think he did it because of the way those Roman numerals are shaped. That's the only thing I can think of.
I suppose.
Here. Yeah, but it would have worked just as fine without them.
I agree.
Yeah, that's. I think it worked better without them. But
yeah.
But it's not terrible.
So, I mean, so next weird. Is the first of another diptych by Robert Samlin.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Those are powerful.
I like it.
The two of them.
Yeah, look at the next.
I like the first one better though.
Okay.
I'm looking at the second one that loads.
Because that guy never looks. That guy neither looks like Bob nor Leland. So.
That's good. That's because it's Bowie.
Why?
Look at his teeth.
Yeah, but why? What does that have to
what
do?
Mean, why?
What does Bowie have to do with Laura Palmer?
He's in the movie.
He's in the movie. Okay. You remember when he comes in out of he comes in on the security camera.
Who knows?
I'm saying it doesn't have anything to do with.
Oh, you're
he's
saying
not a horror element of the film, other than he's a haunting element, but he's not a horrific.
That's true. The context is completely wrong. Yeah, you're right. That's true.
Either way, I like both. I like both.
The
of them.
first one better.
The next one you'll like a lot, Lay, is Sean Longmore.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's just the guy's nose coming out over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, I like this one a lot. Now, see, on the ring there, is that really the symbol on the ring? It's got that one little part.
It's got symmetrical.
I don't remember that.
It's got the
that.
Little leg on it. Yeah. It's not a symmetrical image.
Maybe I wanted it to be, so that's fine. Or assumed it was.
And I like that really he has the letters.
Oh, yeah, from the fingernails? Yep. Yeah, that's really cool.
Wish I understood a tenth of that movie.
So next is Sister Hyde.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's got the proper elements. I don't mind.
It's a neat little design. It looks kind of like a book cover.
The unknown one. Yeah.
Hey, jump ahead.
It's supposed to be in 3D. I don't know.
I got more out of it that it was just kind of in and out of the Black Lodge, but.
Oh, probably. I don't know. I'd love to see this with 3D glasses. Probably be pretty fucked up.
No, it wouldn't because it's not actually set up that way.
Not red and blue.
It's just two colors.
Hold on. I'm going to get some right here.
Okay, but it's not going to do anything for you.
Oh, my God. It's that time of night, huh?
How could it be?
Well, like you know what? You're
we're
right.
Like 2.5 hours before that time of night.
It is that time of night for Latham.
Yeah, it is.
Next,
I reached Slap Happy World.
Next is Unknown 01.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, I mean, it's what's the shadow?
I don't,
you know what?
I don't know. Yeah, it's meh. I shouldn't have included this. This is boring.
Well, no, that's not boring.
Next is by
anytime I get a chance to say I don't like
next is Next is the Wonder Bros.
And that byline just a little on the nose right there. In the town of Twin Peaks, no one is innocent. All right, so everybody's a dick. Okay, so I can stop watching. Done. Figure it out.
Yeah. Done and done.
Yeah, we just watched a horror film called Seven Deadly Sins the other night, and it's like they spend 25 minutes of the film setting, or half 25 minutes or 30 minutes of the film setting up these fucking characters. And by the time that they start getting fucking knocked off, you hate all of them for one reason or another. That you're just like, yeah, when are you gonna fucking start killing these people?
Because they all rooting for the killers.
there's nobody, even like the quote unquote heroine of the film is a fucking cunt, and you want her to die. So it's like, why make everyone hate all of the characters in your story? It's like there's nobody to root for. All at that point, all you want them to do is die.
Which
again is part.
The
short answer
die.
Is that they don't know how to write, because that shouldn't. No, you should be able to make anybody sympathetic. I mean, they made Hannibal Lecter fucking sympathetic at one point.
I agree. I agree 100%.
Great point, Hassan. Great point.
Well, you know why? Because he, you know, listen, he may have been insane, but, you know, like he's, you know, he had his reasons for, you know, grounded for everything he did. So
he had
like,
a code, you know, which allows you to like, you know what? If I don't fuck with this guy, I'm probably going to get out of this conversation alive.
I thought Raymond was pretty good. What do you think?
I enjoyed it.
He was, and he took our deep criticism in stride. So I
And he fought back.
I appreciated that.
He fought back respectfully. You know,
he took everything in the tone that it was meant, and I definitely thought he was definitely a good guest.
Cool. Good. I mean, we got to get Joe on here. He will.
I can't even imagine what movies he'd pick.
I hope he picks one that Hassan doesn't like and just watch them two go at it.
We'll just sit back with popcorn.
I'll have him pick. He'll probably pick one I don't like.
To sit back with the popcorn. I like that idea better.
Yes.
Did you know that Darth Vader was in Clockwork Orange?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Dave Buss?
Yeah.
Oh.
Great movie. Interesting. I love that movie.
Is Close Encounters in your top 10, yes. Hassan? Yeah, me
is
too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That fucking tin pushing scene creeps me out every time. It successfully.
Which one?
The tin pushing scene. The air traffic control scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's really
brilliant. It's just so well done. People are talking over each other, but you can hear everything everybody says. He's the guy is like 26, 30 years old, and he's got enough bravery to make a scene. An action scene where nothing is happening. That is prescient knowledge. Like, you don't learn to do things like that. That's something you instinctively know is going to be effective. You know, just like, and then at the end of it,
it's something he saw in his head, and he was able to visualize it and actually make it come out the way he envisioned it.
I 100% agree with you, but think about the medium. That medium. It almost insists that you over enunciate everything. You know, you overdo everything. So the fact that he took a minimalist approach with something with a major sequence in his story, it's just a wonderfully put together film. You know, they go to India, and these guys are all singing because they heard that it's just all this stuff just eerily. Wonderfully put together. The only scene I didn't like or don't like as much as the rest of the world is the scene where what's his name gets taken away, because it's just so on the nose. It's so like, okay, aliens are coming.
Oh, Carrie Guffey.
Yeah, aliens are coming. The toys are all coming to life, and they snatch the kid.
Carrie!
Now the scene where he the kid.
I mean, the shot down the fireplace flue is just that's heart pounding.
And the scene where he opens the door is probably the most visually stunning thing I've ever seen on film. So I'm not saying I don't like the scene. I'm just saying it's a completely different mood than the rest of the film. You know, the scene where they're all on the fucking cliff and the UFO goes whizzing by and it's being chased by three cop cars. Just you know, it's just one. And then one of the guys goes right off a cliff because he's too busy watching so great. And it's so awesome.
Yeah, it came around to our revival theater a couple years ago, so we went and saw it on the big screen. It was fun to see again.
I did it a couple years ago. I went down to Union Square, the Union Square Theater, and I'm like, I am so in, and I filed in, and it was everything I wanted it to be. Man, it was a wonderful. Yeah.
That's the only time I saw it on the big screen when they just re-released it.
Yeah, because I was too young to go see it in the theater. You know.
Yeah, I didn't see it in the theater at all.
I have a very happy memory.
That 78? That was a year after Star Wars.
Yes, it was.
Same as Star Wars. Yep, it was.
Okay. I have a...
If I'm not mistaken...
No, I don't...
70, I thought it was 78.
I don't doubt you.
No, it's 77.
The scene, one of my favorite memories of my mother.
77.
It says 77. You're absolutely right. The scene where
December 14th, 77. That's why I thought it was 78 because it was almost 78.
It's on the cusp of a scene where Richard Dreyfuss breaks down or he stops to read his map.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing comes up behind him and floats away and then picks him up and all that stuff. After that, the car starts again. He freaks out. He's half sunburned. He freaks out. He drives away. my mom, I'm sitting on the sofa in my grandfather's house, and we're mom. She had to whisper it to me because my grandfather's there. She goes, she leans over and she goes, "That's what you call hauling ass." it just burned in my memory. Like, she's like,
that's "Oh, what you, yeah, you'll yeah, never forget
that's
that.
What you call hauling ass." Fantastic. That two things I remember from my mom, that and History of the World Part One, where he's doing his Torquemada shtick, and then he says, "Let's face it, you can't talk about it." The minute he says, "Let's face it," my mom went, "Oh," like she knew the joke was coming. she just wilted inside to like, "No, don't do this."
That's crazy. Yeah. Memories.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So I just realized that the guy who was sitting on the hill during that chase sequence with the alien ships, and he's got the sign that says, "Stop, we're friendly."
Yeah, he's
That's George LeBay from Christine. Shitters.
Really?
That's the old man. That's the old man that sells him the car.
Oh my God. That's a great piece of trivia.
Spielberg's older work, Shitters. Man. It's just so wondrous. I mean, I like all of his movies. There's not really a Spielberg movie I don't like, but he got really slick in the later years, you know? I don't think he ever lost his eye. I don't think he ever lost his creative flair, but there is a slickness in his later movies that his earlier movies had a kind of randomness to them that was really, you know, looking at it now, contemporarily, looking back at it, it's just really exciting. There's a lot of excitement to his movies. And then there's a lot of just on-the-nose shit that he just didn't give a fuck about. Like Raiders of the Lost Ark, the hero on the white horse. You know, like, there's some things he just, like, fuck you. You know, I'm just doing this, you know? And you got, all of a sudden, you know, Indiana Jones finds a white stallion in the middle of Egypt, you know, to chase a bunch of Nazis. You don't even question it. You know, you're like, all right, that worked. God, that worked.
It's working so well at that point, it doesn't matter
what. Absolutely.
I think his worst movie, or my least favorite movie by him, it's probably 1941.
That's a tough one. It is a tough one.
It's not horrible. It's not horrible. It's just...
When I was a kid, it used to be on HBO like every other night. And I used to love it because it had fighter planes in it, and, you know, it had John Belushi from Saturday Night Live. I didn't understand a word that was being said in the film, but and Dan Aykroyd, a bunch of other people. Years later, I got a copy of it, and I sat down and watched it, and none of it was funny to me. Like every joke failed to land, you know. So I agree, not his best. I still like it. And I think John Williams' score of that film is ridiculous. If you've never heard it separately, it's absolutely unbelievable. But it's not.
I just read when our power was out for a day and change. I read two books. I finished Cary Elwes' Making of Princess Bride, As You Wish book.
Okay,
and I also read a book that detailed the making of Caddyshack, written by a well-known media writer. So he spends a good portion of that talking about the guys who came up with the idea and wrote Caddyshack, and then, you know, obviously it was Harold Ramis's directing debut. But it's an actual wonder that film ended up where it is. Let's put it that way.
Caddyshack,
it's a good way.
Because basically, when he shot. He calls it a $6 million film school because his budget was $6 million and he'd never made a movie before. And basically, he just shot a bunch of stuff. And when they went to edit it together, nothing worked. And they basically brought in a professional editor who said, "Yeah, I can." Well, they went to a real editor, and the guy goes, "He kind of looked at what they had and he goes, 'Yeah, I can fix this. I need $250,000. And the guy, and they go, "Yeah, that's not happening." So the guy ended up calling a buddy of his who had done editing before, and he sat down. He was actually starting a gig in a few weeks. So he started editing, and he spent about 2 weeks cutting the movie together. And then he had to go, so he couldn't finish it. But they ended up finding a guy finally to come in and finish editing properly. And that's how they ended up with what they have. But because when Ramis and the other producer were editing it, it was a fucking disaster.
Interesting. Yeah,
that's what
What was most interesting about it was, so the team who put together, who wrote and ended up putting together Animal House, which when Animal House came out and was such a fucking fantastic, gigantic hit, made all these guys instant famous, hot guys in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So the one guy ended up going off with Ramis to do Caddyshack. Well, the other guys all kind of went off in other directions. But the heat that was generated by, coming out of the product, the fact that it was produced by National Lampoon. And one of the guys that National Lampoon had hired early on as a writer was John Hughes. So there is a script out there of which they have a copy up for sale on a website for $800. Obviously, I'm not shelling out for this, but I would love to fucking get my hands on this. But the name of the script, and it's written by John Hughes and somebody else, is National Lampoon's Jaws 3, Human Zero.
Okay.
And it was supposed to be done as a total spoof the Jaws films.
I heard about that. It was
brilliant fourth wall.
But the studio basically read the script and they knew that there was no way that if for any reason at all, it was successful.
They would never be
able to continue the series.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why they eventually chose to go back and do a serious 3 and 3D film.
I think originally Xanax.
That script exists.
It's somewhere.
Xanax said.
I know where a copy is for sale.
I mean, you can, but it's like, people acknowledge that it does. It's not.
Not like a secret.
That's weird. Yeah, that's good pop culture.
I would love to get my hands on that just to read it. An early John Hughes script spoofing the Jaws, spoofing Jaws films.
Yeah.
Is Blade Runner in your top 10, Hassan?
No.
Oh,
the
All Out
sequel is.
Mm-hmm. Is it really?
I really like the sequel.
Oh,
I tell you, every time I watch 2049, I like it more, and I've seen it about 8 or 10 times.
It's really
amazing film. I tell you,
I watched it the first time and I was nonplussed.
Really,
I was like, it's beautiful. And after I've seen it 5 or 6 times, I was like, fuck me, that's fucking good.
Not better than the original.
I loved it.
Different animal.
It's, you know what it is. I will challenge you.
They're
on that.
They're in the same zoo, but it's a different animal.
It is better because it in and of itself is a comprehensive story, where the first one is a spectacle with very little story to it.
Wrong. And we will talk about that on that podcast.
Not wrong. And we will talk about it on the podcast.
Don't you tell me. Fuck. Don't you tell me, motherfucker. I'll come to Chicago and cut your ass.
I'm gonna
use that piece of video as a gift.
Yeah.
What is the?
You just doing what you were doing. I will figure out a way to make that a gift.
I put that on the podcast page. This is what happens when someone doesn't agree with someone else. He has a
You son of a bitch. I'm gonna find you.
And then I'll just get a screenshot of like Hassan when his thing fails and it just says Hassan Godwin with no image. Hassan just leaves.
Just vanishes.
And Latham gets on his back and then throws a tantrum.
For tonight's show, but I couldn't get my act together to do it. Tonight's show I wanted the whole screen to just be Hal for the entire time we talk. Just the little Hal bubble.
You would have had to have been
Hello, gentlemen.
I didn't find the film that good. It gave me reasons to dislike the film. I'm sorry, Raymond. I have to disagree with you.
It puzzles me how you can actually like that film as much as you do, Raymond.
I'm sorry, Latham, but you're wrong. about Hal, everything.
Open the bathroom door, Hal. I have to go to the potty. Open the bathroom door, Hal.
I'm monitoring your vitals. You do not have to go to the bathroom. Stop monitoring my bowels. No. I enjoy it.
I'm sorry. It's for your own good. I should probably do the outro.
You should. Because we didn't do it.
Latham's not here.
While he's gone potty.
So I would like to say special thanks to our guest, Raymond Benson. Thanks to Purple Planet Music. Get your own awesome music at purple-planet.com. Please check out our website, cinementalpod.com, for all the poster images we discuss on our Down the Tube segments. And don't forget to download and subscribe to Cinemental wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Or you can always listen to new episodes at cinementalpod.com. Also, you can follow us on all major social media accounts at cinementalpod. For Hassan Godwin, Lathan Conger III, and myself, we say thank you so much for listening. And as always, in the words of our friend and mentor, and a darn good driver, Truman Burbank.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.